And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to... I'm back from media days. Mo Ibrahim knows that I had horrible takes about him as a freshman. And allegedly fall camp starts next week, even though the University of Minnesota has failed to provide any sort of notification a week ahead of time. But that is our beloved University of Minnesota Athletic Department. So, Luke, how are things with you today?
Well, you know, I think we should add that I'm actually out of the hospital again. So glad to be back.
Yeah, that's
here.
The best news of the day,
that's
honestly.
The best news of the day. Had another stay back in the hospital. All is good, though. We're very thankful and excited to be back at home talking to you, Ryan, once again. I think this is like 2 for 2 recording in the daytime. That almost never happens. So I'm excited about that.
Well, I'm a huge Olympics bobo. So the fact that like I get to watch the Olympics tonight instead of talking to your dark face in the dungeon that is wherever the heck you are pleases me mightily. Even though I know like half of the stuff was like already happened 16 hours ago. That's why I try to, I just love the Olympics so much. My better half is like, oh, it's so cute. And I'm like, I'm just weird that I want to watch. Like I was watching like the archery, the Team USA archery last night at like 11 PM. Like that's how ridiculous I kind of take this thing,
that shouldn't surprise anybody that you were watching that archery. So okay, let's get into this episode. We're brought to you by actually no one, so we brought in a special guest who's basically sponsoring the podcast today with his time. Daniel House from gophersguru.com joins us today. Daniel, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me. This is gonna be fun. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, House has been someone that I wanted to bring on for some time. He is obviously the owner and publisher of gophersguru.com. If you don't know what it is, we'll have House tell you about it here in a second. But he is someone that I respect his opinions a ton. We usually never really agree on something. And ooh. I wish you could see House's face. He's laughing. It's true. We have some different takes, and I know people like different takes, and I just respect the heck out of this young man. And one day, House, you'll maybe let me hire you to do something. But until that date, you do run gophersguru.com. So for the people who don't know about that, you want to tell them about it?
I'm taking a little bit of a different approach with gophersguru.com, just in-depth content online, features, analytics stuff, film breakdowns, basically anything that you can think of that's in-depth. I'm looking at it like charting first and second down passing attempts, success rates, all these different things, and then melding them together to teach people how film and data can inform the way that you watch football. So this is a next gen in-depth approach to Gophers content, and you can pay $5 a month to get the premium subscription. So you get access to all my content and then weekly film breakdowns during the season. And then usually a feature or two as the season goes along on guys that maybe flash or coaches or fans, every different type of angle I take. So it's been a fun journey, and I'm excited to see what it brings. And Burns, I mean, we agree on something, we disagree on. I don't think it's as skewed the direction you think it is.
I mean, we agree to a degree, because I think we both think similarly, but I think we got some good things lined up, especially Minnesota related, where I think we're going to fall on both sides of the line. But before we get to that, I think we should talk about the big news of the last. I mean, I think it dominated Big Ten media days when I was there, which I'd never been to Indianapolis, by the way. Had either of you two ever been there before?
Yeah, I've been there.
It's
a great city.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, mm-hmm. I was able to hang out with your guy, Gardzi, Mike Rim, and Corbu on that first night. And then I was actually out of there the next day after Minnesota got done. Figured might as well get the heck out of Dodge. I don't need to stay for another day. I got 20 minutes with Mo Ibrahim one-on-one, Tanner Morgan, Boye Mafe, got some with PJ Fleck. I mean, there's a ton of content up on GI about it, and I learned a lot. So, I mean, I thought it was incredibly beneficial, but the news that dominated the news cycle while we were there is the imploding of the Big 12 with the news that Texas and Oklahoma are headed to the SEC. What does that mean for the rest of the Big 12? So, Luke, I mean, you can provide. What do you think?
I mean, allegedly, right? It's not all done. It's not done.
Oh, stop. There is, stop right now. There is far too much smoke. I think the news today was, they formally told them, we're not coming back. So
okay, that'd be news to me. So that's true.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's interesting. Okay. So this is all TV, and I think we all know that, right? Like
it's all about the Dolores.
Yes, it's yeah. all about TV money. Here's my opinion on this. I think this was inevitable. Not necessarily that Texas and Oklahoma were going to go to the SEC, but the Big 12 was going to die, right? They lost Nebraska. That was kind of a little bit of the handwriting on the wall, just to start things. No matter what your opinions are of Nebraska, right? But what I will say is, there's kind of this, like, if you look at it geographically, there are four conferences that kind of make sense as how they set up. Ready? Right? The SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC. So geographically, and the Big 12 is just kind of in the middle. None of them other than Texas have a really big TV reach. Like almost none of them. I'm trying to think. Yeah. Almost none of them have a big TV reach. So inevitably it felt like they were going to get busted up. And that's looking like what's going to happen. Here's what terrifies me, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. Ryan knows this. I'm a big Pac-12 guy. I'm a big Washington Huskies fan.
Your Pac-12 is going to cease to exist here in, I think, like 5 to 7 years.
I don't want to see the Pac-12 die personally. I really like the Pac-12. I really like late night football. I don't want Washington in the Big Ten because it is going to complicate family dynamics so much for me. Like,
oh, stop.
It's going to be hellacious. We had a text message string. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants to fight over it. And that's what it's going to be. My Thanksgiving is going to be complaining about the other teams, right? Like I can't love Washington anymore. That's going to kill me.
Well, the big news, I think Big Ten wise, and I'm curious to get House's thoughts on this, is the steam that the Big Ten sees all this, certainly. And while I think geographically it would, I guess, quote unquote, make sense if they were to add like Iowa State and Kansas State, maybe even Cincinnati. But I think with the Big Ten, and obviously there's been a lot of reports here in the last 72, 96 hours about it, is they want that LA market and they want to go get USC and UCLA because, again, that is a gigantic media market that means more money for everybody. Now, obviously, the East Coast schools of Rutgers and Maryland. I mean, could you imagine like a Saturday night on ABC between Rutgers and UCLA? Like, who the hell wants to see that? I don't.
No, here's the thing. House, I do want your input on this. But here's the thing about this whole thing is it's not just the TV markets that the Big Ten wants. It's the alumni markets, right? Or that's not like a thing per se, but they want the alumni. Because they scatter throughout the country, right? And they build a bigger presence. So like big alumni schools are going to be like USC, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, Arizona State. Those people, like those become big. Those in aggregate can become big markets in addition to just like, okay, geographically, the Twin Cities is like the 15th largest the 15th largest TV market. They want the alumni. I would assume they want the alumni piece as well. They only want the huge schools, right?
House, what are your thoughts on the whole implosion of the Big Ten, or excuse me, the Big 12, what the Big Ten's looking to do? What do you think?
It all comes down to NIL, Burns. They want to put the best brands out so the guys are playing in big games, able to capitalize on name, image, and likeness. It drives a lot of this. I mean, they knew it was coming, and now with the idea of, you know, Oklahoma and Texas getting to the SEC, and that's going to just create more dollar revenue for the SEC, and guys are going to be in recruiting wanting to go to these SEC programs. So now the Big Ten and Pac-12 are thinking about coming together and expanding it out, and academics is going to be a big part of this as well. I believe academics and NIL are the two driving factors. They want to add some schools that are powerful research institutions to expand the footprint there as well. So they're not going to take schools that are low and the AAU outputs. They want the schools that are going to have excellent academic ratings. And I think about it right off the top. I mean, California, USC, UCLA, Stanford, get that Nike Oregon brand in there. Maybe Colorado jumps in. That would be interesting as well. The group of pods like you talked about.
Yeah, I think Colorado makes a ton of sense. So say like in the scenario where Minnesota or the Big Ten takes three more. So say it's Colorado and then USC and UCLA, and then you go with the whole pod thing. Like, what would the pods look like? I mean, would it be All right. So let's say there's four pods. So what would that be? You'd be at 16 teams, Luke?
Yeah, I think you'd have to get to 16 to make the pods.
So so what would it be? Like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and then do you throw Colorado in there? Do you throw Illinois in there? Do you throw Northwestern?
Nebraska?
Nebraska? Because or again, who do you throw with the West in that case? Like who is in there with USC, UCLA? I mean, the other thing that, again, I feel like it's those three schools that they'll try and go get, or it's going to be some, for some reason, they get Kansas and Iowa State and say Oklahoma State. Again, I don't think it makes a ton of sense, but like, so say you get those and then it'd be Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa and Nebraska. I just think like the point I think we're all trying to make here is number one, don't look at future schedules because they are absolutely meaningless.
Yeah.
Again, I think you'll see 2022 play out what it is, but like 23 and beyond, there's like no point. I mean, I think that's just the way we're going to go is with the pods, and it doesn't bother me one way. Luke.
No. I just want to say you were saying 16 for pods. I think they got to get to 20 for pods for it to make sense. I think they got to get to 20 schools. So then you get four pods of five, right? So into House's point, you're right. It's totally on name, image, likeness. And if you're looking at that, if you're looking at like, okay, what markets are going to help you there? If you think about the Pac-12, obviously LA, that makes sense. Then Seattle is by far the next biggest market there. I guess you could say Palo Alto and San Francisco.
I'd be all for rating the Pac-12. I guess what does that mean for like Oregon? Like when Oregon come?
Oh, Phil Knight. I don't know what Phil Knight's going to let happen there.
Well, like it's also just like what happened. Like, where are we 5 years from now? Because, if you're Kansas State or Oklahoma State, you have to be looking around, or even West Virginia. Like, you got to be looking around, being like, who the hell's going to want us? Like, West Virginia to the ACC makes a ton of sense to me.
Yeah.
But, like, where is Kansas State and Oklahoma State going to go? Or like,
yeah, and even Kansas as well.
Right. I mean, or what happens to TCU? Where the heck do they go from here? Or does the Big 12 like try to expand or it just kind of try to fill those original spots with people like Houston and SMU and maybe your favorite people up in Fargo think it's time for them to finally become a Power 5 team?
Yeah, a lot of big name image likeness market up there for sure.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati in the list.
Well, the conversation I think I had with either Andy Greeter or Justin Gard was about Cincinnati. What happens when Luke Fickell leaves? Like, Luke Fickell's going to take a really good job here in the next year or two. I think he takes one after this year. And then it's like, well, do you want Cincinnati without Luke Fickell? It can't be just solely predicated the fact that Cincinnati, as we currently sit here at this moment in time on July 26th, is a top 25 college football team. That's great. But are they going to stay there? Do you want that media market so badly? Does it make a ton of sense? I don't know that it does. But again, it is going. All I know is like you can't put it back in the jar now. Like Texas and Oklahoma, they're going to end up in the SEC. The Big 12 or the Big 10 is looking to make moves out in Luke's favorite time zone, the Pacific time zone. And so does that mean the Pac-12 is going to be absolutely rated by the Big 10? Where does all these teams in between, like what, like if you're Oregon State right now, you got to be looking around like, oh God, like who thinks they're in a better spot right now? Like Oregon State or Kansas State? I don't know. Like it's going to be awfully interesting. All I know is, you know, I'm all for it. Again, I think it ends up being the Big 10 and the SEC become kind of the two megas. And then there's maybe going to be like who's ever left. You're in whatever is resembling. I don't even know what they would call it at that point.
Question for both of you as we kind of round this out. The one thing that the Big Ten has wanted forever is to get Notre Dame. Does Notre Dame No, you don't think they'll stay independent the whole time?
Well, first of all, I'm incredibly biased because I hate Notre Dame, and I think because they think they are the bee's knees. They think they're God, well, probably in their minds, God's greatest gift to the college football and college athletic scene. But I just think they have way too much pride, especially with that deal with NBC, with the football games and the amount of TV money they get from that. what would be the selling point to them? They're already going to get like 40, 50 million, I think it is, from NBC for 12 college football games of them playing the Little Sisters of the Poor, a.k.a. the rest of the ACC. Like, do I think, would I like to see them actually play people so we know if they're any good before they get boat raced out of the college football playoff? Sure.
I guess I'd
love to see them in the Big Ten of the SEC. But
my point is, like, can the Big Ten and or the SEC or the Pac-12 or, you know, whoever ends up being like, hey, guys, you know, these rivalries we've had, you know, like Michigan State, Notre Dame, USC, Notre Dame, you know, whatever. We're like, you're not in. Sorry, we're not going to play anymore. You got to have those marquee games.
That would literally, as far as I could think, House, probably be the only leverage that they'd have is if all these conferences just go to absolute crap. And that's the new thing is you can't, like, we already have enough. I mean, you can play your non-conference games against the MAC or whoever else, but, like, we're not going to play you now. Like, what? I think that would, that has to be about the only leverage they would have, right?
The super conference thing is real. If that happens where you have just a small group of schools and a big, big, big reach for branding, I mean, that's what it comes down to. These TV networks are all going, hey, we want the best markets together. And if that means putting together a super conference and Notre Dame's unwilling to enter one of them, then they're probably going to have to get into a conference in order to pick up some of the marquee games and add more revenue. Is NBC, I don't know when the Notre Dame contract's up, but is NBC going to be willing to kick as much money to Notre Dame when they're independent versus now having all these super conferences? Are they going to want to get into the college football game a little bit more and possibly get a conference at some point? That you got to think about all the TV network stuff that chimes right with this.
All right. So I just looked it up. So NBC actually pays Notre Dame $15 million a year. It's over $1 million a football game. And between ACC and NBC TV revenue, they get about $30 million. And that contract runs through 2025. So again, that's only a few years from now. And if the super conferences in 4 or 5 years are going to be a thing, maybe it's finally the time that independent Notre Dame finally joins something. I mean, there's
be interesting to see.
It's great to speculate about, but I mean, there is, I think we're going to learn a lot more in the coming weeks and months. Obviously.
That TV contract nugget is interesting because 2025 is literally the perfect time for that TV agreement to be due again. Wow. That's interesting.
So I think, I mean, now that I know all that, I mean, I think there's, you could tell Notre Dame, you know, if you join the Big Ten, you're going to make $45 million in revenue in terms of from TV instead of 30, even though I think it'll probably be more than that at that time. So it'll be interesting.
Just think what the SEC revenue splits will look like when Oklahoma and Texas get in there. And then if you get the California LA market into the Big Ten, Notre Dame, it might be more advantageous for them to get into one of these super conferences and be independent.
And you got to think too about it's, I mean, I understand that it almost is all football, right? But the Big Ten has tried to force their hand into making hockey profitable, right? They obviously there's the basketball angle as well. And Notre Dame's got their feet in a lot of places in those other revenue sports. Obviously the Big Ten for hockey and then obviously the ACC for basketball. I'm interested to see how it plays out. I think there's a lot of interesting angles that could happen here. Any parting thoughts here, Ryan, before we move on?
No, I think Minnesota, you know, regardless of what happens, and if you're looking at this from a Minnesota perspective and it does become pods, I mean, it really doesn't change anything for me. I mean, they're still going to play Wisconsin and Iowa every year. I don't know who the two other teams will be in that. I think it depends on if you add Iowa State, if you add Colorado, because I think they'll be more geographically clustered, I guess I would say, in that instance, because maybe you throw a Northwestern into that pod. I'm not entirely sure, but I think for those of you who enjoy playing like the Indianas and the Marylands and the Rutgers, I don't know how much longer you'll be playing them because consistently, even though I still think it's the strangest thing that Maryland of all teams for football is just the team that Minnesota plays every year for a crossover. It doesn't make absolutely any sense to me, but you know, I'm not going to, I guess, complain about it this year, but well, it'll be interesting. House, any parties?
I don't see it changing anything for Minnesota, like you said, because of where they're geographically located, the things that they bring to the table, the brand that they have. It comes down to who that, you know, third or fourth or fifth team, depending upon how they structure this, who it is, because, you know, Iowa and Wisconsin are in there with Minnesota. And then as a Colorado, I don't see the Big Ten adding Iowa State. I would be stunned if they did. There's a higher probability they go for Colorado and get into that market.
I mean, I'd be all for Minnesota getting in a pod with Colorado because I love going to Colorado. The Denver and Boulder area is incredibly cool.
Yeah.
It's a great place to go out and see a game, which many Gopher fans are going to be doing this fall. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting, Luke. That's for sure.
For sure. All right, let's transition, talk some preseason stuff here for the Gophers. Obviously, getting House on gives us a different vantage point. Ryan has already tried to paint the picture that you guys don't agree on everything, which I like. Not that Ryan and I agree on everything, but I'm going to play kind of mediator here today. We've got a few different topics, so want to get your guys' opinion on this. And then very first, I think we just want to look at kind of over-unders for total games. First, to start, in 2021, the current over-under that I can find is that Iowa is an 8.5 over-under for wins. And I want to get your guys' opinion on that. Maybe Mr. Burns, you can go first. Do you think this is a good line? And if you were betting, are you going to take the over or the under on 8.5?
I hate this line. I don't understand it. Again, maybe Iowa is the Iowa that we see, but I talked about this with our Iowa guys at Big Ten Media Days. I looked at them and I was like, why is it 8.5? Because I don't get that. Because, well, let's start with schedule. Okay. The first two games for Iowa this year, Indiana and Iowa State, two top 25 teams. Okay. I mean, it is what it is. All right. Then you look at kind of the way that it kind of trends for them. They got Wisconsin on the road, Northwestern on the road, and then they play Minnesota at home. Okay. They're still on the road at Nebraska, on the road at Maryland. And why I'm not bullish on them this year, and I think I tweeted it out a few days ago, is I think Spencer Petras, their quarterback, is incredibly average. I didn't see anything from him that was like, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. They lost their top two receivers, including House's guy, Amir Smith-Marset, former Minnesota commit for 36 hours. They lost Brandon Smith in the NFL. They lost Sean Bayer. But where I just have the issue is, like, their offensive and defensive lines this year don't scare me. You lose Alaric Jackson, first team all conference. You lose Coy Cronk, Mark Kallenberg, Colin Banward, four guys there that started games for Iowa last year. You don't have Tristan Wirfs there. You still have Tyler Lindenbaum, who's arguably the best center in the country. But, like, I am terrified for them at their tackle position because I don't think they have an NFL, bona fide NFL guy ready there. And then I look at defensively. I mean, that's maybe where I have the bigger thing for them is how are they going to win in the trenches? Because Davion Nixon, a.k.a. the Big Ten Defensive Lineman of the Year, he's gone. Chauncey Golston, first-team all-conference, he's gone. They lost Jack Heflin as well. And they were looking at the transfer portal incredibly hard for D-linemen. They offered, I think, a handful. And that tells me that just like Minnesota looking for secondary help, they don't feel good about it. And that's where you look at their depth chart. I mean, you have Y.A. Black, Marshall's own, projected as the starter at 270 pounds. Behind him is Lucas Van Ness, who I remember seeing at camp, I think 2 years ago now. And they have him listed as a three tech, and he's like 265. And their one tech is former Minnesota commit Noah Shannon, who hasn't really played a lot. I think the point I'm trying to make is the schedule isn't conducive for me to see Iowa. Like, how is Iowa going to score? Because I know their back seven is good. I get that. But, like, they have tough games. They got Indiana, Iowa State. They have Penn State in a crossover. They have on the road at Wisconsin, Northwestern, and Nebraska. And before Minnesota plays them, they're on the road at Wisconsin and Northwestern. And so I looked at the Iowa guys and I was like, what am I missing? They're like, well, they're just going to go 9-3. I go, okay, Mr. I'm going to look at everything through Hawkeye colored glasses. Why? Like, Luke, you and I on this show, I mean, people can call us what they want, but we at least give, like, rational, in my opinion, thoughts about why we think what we think. But I'm taking the under for all the reasons I stated. What do you think about Iowa's chances here in 21?
I'm taking the under as well for a lot of the reasons that you laid out. And I zone in specifically on the defensive line, looking at what they have coming back. There's Zach Van Valkenburg, the former Hillsdale College product. Is it John Wagner opposite him? Yaya Black, like you said, inside with Noah Shannon is just meh to me. I don't see them having that type of D-line that they've had in the past. And last year, you look at their numbers, they were like 59th in havoc rate last year at around 11%. So it's not like they were amazing last year. They just did a great job of eliminating explosive plays. And that's the bread and butter of Iowa. They were the number one team in the nation at limiting explosive plays. Opponent success rates were real low. They were the fourth most efficient defense in the country. The one thing that could help them out is their secondary, I think, is pretty solid. You know, Jack Corner, Riley Moss, Matt Hankins all coming back. So they should be good there. So that might help compensate for some of their pass rush issues. But teams should be able to run the ball against them. I believe Minnesota should match up well, considering the physicality that they have in the trenches. But you know, the one theme has been with Iowa, you find a way to get after them early with passing. That seems to be the formula to beat them when you dig into it a little bit deeper. And I don't like their quarterback as well. Like you said, Spencer Petras, number 79 last year in passing efficiency, very erratic and inaccurate at times, can make a lot of mistakes if you get pressure on him. His weapons take a step back this year. Noah Reganey, more of an exclusive slot guy. Tyrone Tracy, Sam LaPorta is a solid tight end. But then they got two incoming four stars in Arlen Bruce and Keegan Johnson. So how do they mesh into the picture? Tyler Goodson's back at running back too. Tyler Linderbaum at center seems to be the main guy coming back. The thing that I want to mention about the O-line is they had some guys miss time in spring ball too, which could hurt the development of some of those guys.
Same, and
I think that's
the D-line. YA Black never practiced at a single one that the Iowa media was at.
Yep. So there's limited starting experience already in that group, and you're looking at more developmental guys that need to get those reps. Does that hurt them up front on both sides of the ball? When you look at the theme of when Minnesota plays Iowa, you have to be able to win in the trenches. That's what's going to take Minnesota to that level where they're able to consistently compete against Iowa and Wisconsin. They have to win in the trenches. And you look at it this year, it appears that could be the case because Minnesota probably will have the advantage. You mentioned their schedule to start. Don't sleep on Kent State either. Dustin Crum is a guy that a lot of NFL scouts really like, quarterback down there. That is not going to be a game where you can just show up and not play well. Kent State's going to be an interesting team this year.
Well, you again, for all the reasons, you look at it, it's like, how do you get to 8.5? I
don't get
like,
it.
And you say, Kirk Ferentz, he always wins 8, Ryan. You're an idiot. Like, the years that I was supposed to be bad, they're good. And the years that they're supposed to be good, they're bad. Well, apparently this is one of those years where they're supposed to be good, unbeknownst to House and I. Like, I just, and when you kind of look at the Minnesota angle, one of the tidbits I did pick up for Big Ten Media Days was I was talking to Mo, and I go, what team do you want to beat most this year? And he just right away, Iowa. I go, why Iowa? Because we haven't played well when we play against Iowa, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah. He has been looking, he's like, I have watched Iowa tape every single day for months. And so if you don't think the reigning Big Ten running back of the year doesn't want to end the 22-year streak at Kinnick Stadium. Like, it again, Wisconsin and Northwestern on the road for Iowa before.
Yep.
We'll see. I mean, I'm bullish that Minnesota's chances in Iowa City for, I think, the first time in my 10 years on this. Now, they actually have to go out and do it, obviously, but I don't get the Iowa love. Now, maybe Spencer Petras becomes the next. Who's the 49ers quarterback that's an Iowa guy?
C.J. Beathard.
Yeah, maybe he becomes C.J. Beathard. Maybe Tyler Goodson is the next. I think he's a good player. But, like, how do they move the ball and how do they stop the run? So,
yeah.
I just don't get it, Luke. I don't get it.
All right, so I just got my bet booked. I took the under on that. Thanks for the insight, guys.
Good move. It's just like it could be like a 7-5 year for them. I mean, you could see a plausible way they go 0-2 to start because sure. Indiana's no slouch and they're on the road at Iowa State, who I think is going to be a pretty damn good team.
I'll tell you this much. The data seems to indicate 7 wins, but when you look at the schedule, I find it difficult to even come up with that. Well, just looking at matchups.
Right. And again, 8.5. I mean, they could even go 8-4 and they're still not going to make the number. So I think whether it's a FanDuel, DraftKings, Vegas Insider, again, I don't bet college football, but like I don't understand that number. So that's interesting to me.
All right. So let's look conversely at Minnesota. Currently, what I can see in 2021 for wins, we're stuck at 7. And so first, maybe House will let you go first because Ryan got the first stab at Iowa here. How do you feel about
this line? I want to get to this at the end because I think
you do?
We'll okay. go through. Yeah. Cause I think we'll okay. get to some things in the middle here that will sure. kind of dictate things at the end. So right, if I can veto that to the end, that'll be perfect.
That's fine. Okay. Instead, let's skip forward and let's look at, position groups instead. So heading into fall camp, what do you think is going to be the most improved position group? House, go ahead, take it.
I like the linebacker group, and I know this is right where Burns and I are going to disagree from the top here. This is—I knew I was preparing for this, and I knew Burns was going to say no way, and I'm willing to bet on this, Burns. We'll come up with something. We'll come up with something. But I do believe the linebacker group will be better. I do believe they will be better. Jack Gibbons is a guy that could be the X factor player for them. Physical, good length, made a lot of plays against the run. I didn't think he was that athletic prototype guy that can run all over the field, but he's solid enough. Braylon Oliver coming back from injury, we'll see how long it takes him to get to that full strength. But last year you had so many guys just not getting any reps in the spring to develop. They're out there playing. Sorry, Marin, just learning on the fly. DJ Gordon as well was a poorly graded run defender last year. And I think a lot of the back half of that depth chart, like Cody Lindenberg, for example, just needed physical development. You can't expect a guy like that as a true freshman to come in and handle some of these Big Ten offensive lines. You've got to have a guy that can deconstruct blocks. And I think that's one of the most important traits in a Joe Rossi defense is you have to have linebackers can get downhill, stay in the run fit, and get off of blocks. And it was a – last year, the defense for me, it was a three-part issue because I think defense is all layered. And a defensive lineman gets out of a gap or doesn't control a gap inside, no penetration. An edge player doesn't get contained on the outside. And then a linebacker gets out of a run fit as a result or, you know, a safety has a bad third-level angle that – you know, they're trying to make a hero play. There's so many factors that contribute to defense. But one of the core root problems that I've talked about a lot on the website is linebacker play. Got to be able to deconstruct blocks. And I think there's some guys that improve physically. Lindenberg could be the guy that I'm high on Cody Lindenberg. I think this could be a year where he really breaks out. This is the breakout Cody Lindenberg year.
I have talked about on this podcast since they got him committed. I'm on the Cody Lindenberg train. But Here's where we differ is I don't get how you get to where they're the most improved because I think you look at the D line. I think you could look at the O line. I think you could look at the safeties.
Yeah.
I just think like if I had to choose one, I would go D line, which in effect, rising tides lift all ships and that would lift the linebackers better. Like I think defensive line for me is where I think they're going to be very much improved. Another year, well, first of all, it's the first year they've had the same defensive line coach in Chad Wilt. They actually got time with him. You know, from talking with Boye Mafe at Big Ten Media Days, one of the interesting tidbits he kind of brought up to me is I was asking him, like, what are your individual goals? Do you have a sack number, tackle for loss number? And he goes, I don't because as a defensive line unit, we want to be able to have better sack numbers. I go, not just you. And he's like, no. We're going to be doing more stunts, more twists. We want to, as a collective group, and boy, acknowledge, like, I know that I'm probably going to be the guy that's going to be getting chipped, but if we can do more stunts and twists and Val Martin and Niles Pinckney and Asezi and Thomas Rush, you know, if we all can get after the passer, that's only going to help me more. Or having Niles Pinckney come in with 1,200 snaps from Clemson and Val Martin be a pass rusher on passing downs. You have D'Angelo Carter as another year older. Asezi Otemiwu, can he provide anything consistent? You have MJ Anderson there, Thomas Rush, who I think is going to have a much better year this year. And I think just having a better, like against the run, I think they should be able to, and I asked Boye about this, you know, Rossi and Fleck and whoever else talked about how Boye needs to become better against the run. So I go, Boye, everybody says, including your coaches, you need to become better against the run. What do you have to say? And he's like, I know I do. And that's consistency and that's effort on first and second down. I know now that I have to play better on first and second down if I want to earn those reps on passing downs. So I just think the defensive line is going to do a much better job against the run, which would in turn help the linebackers, which would in turn help the safeties and the corners. Say the defensive line is able to figure things out, and with Joe Rossi and Chad Wilt with different stunts and blitzes, and these corners and safeties only have to cover for 3 seconds instead of 5.5. Again, that's where, again, I think linebacker will be improved. I mean, I think Jack Gibbons will help. And I think everybody getting a year older and with some experience will help. But I just think that you have to look at it in the way that the defensive line, I think, controls how much better and much improved the defense will be overall. Because House, if the D-line is what they were last year, I mean, the linebacker, it's going to be tough sledding for who's ever at linebackers to me.
Yeah, it builds off of what I said in terms of it being a layered approach to defense, because it all starts up front. And I do believe you have a valid point there, because they have a nice mix of different skill sets as well that you can rotate around based upon situations, which kind of builds off what Boye was telling you. If they are able to be successful on early downs, which they were one of the worst teams in early down defense in college football last year, specifically against the run. So you weren't even into third down that much. I mean, I just wrote a piece on it today talking about where the Gophers ranked in terms of just getting to third down. So once you get to that down, you're able to send stunts and twists and be more exotic with your fronts and mix your personnel up, which makes you more difficult for opposing offensive lines to block. So the defensive line has to get more pressure with four rushers. You can't blitz all the time. You do have to be able to get home with four, and that gives you more options, especially when you're playing against teams that have some really good playmakers. You can scheme a little bit differently with your coverages and mix them up. And the defensive line, no doubt, is going to be better. There's just, I mean, the personnel alone, I mean, they're running out defensive tackles against Nebraska that had literally no experience, and now you bring in Niles Pinckney and Bell Martin.
D.V. Harris, and maybe you will see Jalen Logan Redding, but I mean, you're throwing out fourth, fifth, and sixth year guys now at D line, yep. And even seventh if you want to cut Mikeadu Treadway, which you should, because he's going to play and rotate in. I just think the D line is going to be much improved compared to the linebackers. But I hope both are, Luke.
I hope so too, because I think we can all agree that if the Gophers are going to have success this year, the defense has to be the most improved side of the ball. We know they can put up points. They bring back a lot of talent there. That whole offensive line is back. But if you can't stop anybody, you're not going to win football games. So, and last year, they arguably didn't stop anybody. So that's how you end up 3-4 like they were last year. Okay, some more over-under here. Ryan, did you set these lines? Or who set these lines?
I did. I don't know that.
Did you give these to House in advance?
No.
I feel like this is unfair, House. So I'm going to root for you, not just because we both are redheads, right? But because it's unfair. Ryan always props himself up and doesn't give anybody any credit. So,
okay. Well, I'm good on the fly. We'll see what we got.
You're good on the fly. Okay. Over unders here. I will give the lines. House, you get to go first because you are the guest always. How many touchdowns will Tanner Morgan throw? The line that Ryan has set is 19.5. Are you taking the over or the under?
What was the line? Can you say that again? Line for touchdowns?
19.5 touchdowns for Tanner Morgan thrown.
I swear to God, if you're putting into this some algorithm, I am going to be furious.
No, I already had a whole projection already for Tanner. I will take the over on that. Okay, I'll take the over on that. I feel like the passing game is going to be much more detailed this year, just in terms of like getting open, because you watch the all 22 last year, the games are like just the cuts that the TV cuts, you see just guys not being able to get open downfield, and the detail of that passing scheme wasn't there. And Mike Sanford coming in, you know, as a new offensive coordinator, not having much time to work with Tanner. I just believe that you're going to see a lot of different things that the offense will roll out. I've talked a lot about just being more efficient on early downs and how that sets you up for success offensively over on the website. So, I mean, Tanner Morgan, he can get back to the same type of play. You know, even if he can get halfway to where he was in 2019 in terms of production, I mean, I'm looking at like 3,200 yards and 25 TDs. I mean, worst case, I'm looking at like 2,300 yards and 18 TDs is kind of my benchmark for Tanner. And then maybe it's somewhere in the middle there.
Well, here, I'll play devil's advocate. I set 19.5 because you look at 2 years ago, In 13 games, he threw for 30. Last year, he threw for 7 in 7 games. So kind of tried to find a middle ground at the 19.5. And what happens if it's the Mo Ibrahim year again, where Minnesota gets within the 5-10-yard line, and it's just going to be Mo Ibrahim vulturing everything again? I mean, Tanner could still have a good year and throw 15, 16 touchdown passes. I mean, that's the thing to me. Now, you and I both know that Mike Sanford likes to run his offense off two things: efficiency and explosiveness.
Yep.
That's what, you know, that's kind of the thing he's striving for in every single drive. Is he wants to be efficient with what they have. That means getting into good, you know, second and fours and third and shorts and being able to generate explosive plays from that. But I mean, what happens if Chris Ottmobile continues to get tackled at the 1-yard line? What happens, you know, if they just get inside the 20 and it becomes the Mo Ibrahim show like it did last year, where he ran for 15 touchdowns in 7 games? So, I mean, I think I would take the under. I think Tanner ends up at that 16 to 18 probably number, because I just think this offense is still going to be so heavily predicated on Mo Ibrahim once they get into the red and the green zone that Tanner can still have a good year statistically, certainly. But I think you are still going to see, once Minnesota gets within the 10 or the 20-yard line, that Minnesota is just going to hand it off to the reigning Big Ten running back of the year.
Good. I like that. You guys kind of agreed more than I thought you would. I was hoping.
We're right in the middle. We were right in the middle there, because I'm feeling like 20, you know, between 18 and 25, you could cut it right in the middle and be pretty good, best and worst case. And I mean, like Ryan said, scoring from depth is the key here. I do believe they'll have more explosive plays. And if their offense is going to be successful and take the next step, mm-hmm. they can still run the football, but they need to be able to have a dynamic passing game, especially on first and second down, layering their concepts, which I think 2019, they did a really good job of, you know, RPO, being able to mix into play action, being able to mix into drop back and layering that up. I talked a lot about that on the site too, as well, just trying to build that passing game that's more dynamic and explosive, because then you play the cat and mouse game where if your passing game is really good, you can, you know, you have to take a defender out of the box and that opens things up for Mo. It's kind of the cat and mouse game defensively on how you want to defend it. So explosive passing game ties into explosive running game in my opinion. So that's the reason why I'm a little bit higher on the curve than Ryan is.
Yeah, it was a good line, Ryan. I gave you a lot of shade, and you know what? You set a decent line. I like it. Good work.
Oh, that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me on this podcast.
I know. It's not going to continue. Okay. Rushing yards for Mo Ibrahim. 1,500 over Underhouse.
I think I'm going to take the over on that. And it's going to be right around that 1,600 yard mark is where I would project he's going to be. But again, high volume rushing offense, how much do they scale that back? I don't see it being very much based upon PJ Fleck's pass tendencies. How much does Mike Sanford's tendencies play into the equation? But you're going to use one of the most explosive backs in the Big Ten, sixth most efficient rusher in the country last year. And it all starts with that pairing up that explosive passing game with the inside zone, the outside zone, and being able to, you know, displace defenders and also be able to have that explosive perimeter passing game, because that's where Tanner thrived in 2019, was throwing explosive passes at 20 plus yards. He's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in that area. And when you saw slot fades and different things like that last year, he was successful in that category. So I believe that pairing that passing game up with the running game, being around that 1600 yard mark, is just about right.
You said, so you take the over.
Yep.
That assumes that assumes that he stays healthy. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that.
True.
Here's what I'll say. I'll take the under. I think House is probably right to take the over there. I know that somebody pointed out to me today the number, I guess, that Mo should be trying to reach, quote unquote, is 1,815 yards, which I think he would pass Darrell Thompson to become the all time leading rusher. But I mean, you'd be assuming then he's averaging like 135, 140 yards per game. Now, I know from talking to Sanford and Kenny Burns that, I mean, Mo's still going to be what they call the bell cow back. It means he's still going to get 25 touches a game, 30 touches a game. And if you just extrapolate what he's done historically, he averages 5.5 yards a carry. So you're going to put yourself around that. But I just think that they're going to, I think they, what they should do is keep mowing that 20 to 25 range, or more so towards the 25, by introducing more Trey Potts. And if Mo needs a break, maybe some more Cam Wiley as well. I know that Mo also talked about Bryce Williams, and you know, it's interesting to hear Mo talk about Kai Thomas and Bucky Irving too, who are doing everything they can to learn from Mo, which I think is pretty cool. But I mean, I just think you're going to see more Trey Potts, who Mo Ibrahim doesn't gush about a lot of people, from someone who's interviewed him now for years, but he will go on and on about Trey Potts. He thinks he's going to be the next Rodney Smith. Those are his words, not mine. So don't attach that like a Hank Apke take or something like that. But I mean, I love Trey Potts. I think if he can just stay healthy, which he did in the spring, you're just going to see him be introduced more. And so I think there's a plausible scenario where, you know, Fleck has talked about at length again last week, the pair and the spare approach. Well, if that means Mo's only getting 20 to 25 touches, he can still get to 100 yards easily with that. But I think if maybe Trey Potts is going to be one of the guys that's going to generate these explosive plays, maybe Cam Wiley's deep speed can get there too. I'm not sure, but I just think you'll see more of Potts and Wiley because I think Fleck trusts them more, which is something that Kenny Burns talked about with me, that maybe Fleck didn't trust them as much last year, so he didn't rotate, give Kenny Burns the ability to rotate them in more. But I mean, I'd love to take the over here and for it to hit, because if that's the scenario, Minnesota's probably won a lot of football games, and Mo for Heisman maybe becomes a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that'd be, I think, really cool for a Minnesota player in the modern football age to actually be considered for that. So I will take the under just because I have questions about, you know, Mo being able to stay healthy if he gets that many touches a game. Like if he's getting 30 touches a game at 13 games, I mean, I don't have to tell you, that's a ton of touches. I mean, we're talking like 400 touches.
Mm-hmm.
That's a ton for someone who's 5'8", 215 pounds. So I just think you'll see more of the running back, so I'll take the under.
All right. Number of catches for Devin Spran Ford.
Or Brevin Span.
Oh, jeez. I literally...
The fact that you butchered that insults me.
Yeah, that's bad. My bad.
Brevin Span, I mean, I can't not have House on and have somebody actually give a subjective take.
That's hilarious. So, my bad. My bad, Brevin. The more common the over name under, is Devin.
Yeah. The over-under I said is 13.5. Now, he has had 5 career catches the last 2 years, House. So when you look at your projections for Brevin, what do you think? 13.5 for catches for Brevin Span Ford in 2021.
It is incredibly difficult to project because we just don't know whether he's going to stay healthy, Burns. That's the major thing is if he is healthy, does he become like this red zone warrior? Like we've all been waiting to see this breakout season. And it felt like he was on that trajectory, improving as a run blocker. I mean, Sanford even talked about it following the Illinois game. And then he had that whole injury that derailed things. So can he build off of that from last season? I'm going to say yes. I'm going to take the over on 13.5.
Be still my beating heart. Sweet Moses and Mary. I mean, that's the question. It's not if Minnesota is going to use him at this point. I really don't think it's an if anymore. I think it's they're going to use him. And if Brevin is healthy, quote unquote healthy, so say 90% and above for 13 games, again, I think he is going to be, I mean, 25 catches for 300 yards and 5 touchdowns, which again, that's a breakout season for a Minnesota tight end, considering the lack of production there in recent years. So, you know, I'm obviously going to take the over. I just think, I mean, Fleck said it best. I mean, here's the quote: Brevin Span Ford has got to have a huge year for us. We know that. He knows that, and I don't think it's a secret at this point. So, if Brevin's healthy, which that's been the thing. I mean, it's not a question of talent to me with Brevin Span Ford, mm-hmm. just like it's not a question of talent to me with Trey Potts, is if they're healthy, they're dynamic Big Ten players that I think Minnesota will utilize. It's just you have to make – it's tough to make the club when you're always in the tub. The best ability is availability. I mean, you say what you – whatever other cliche you want to say. So I think this is the year for Brevin. I think year 4 – I think without Bateman, without Johnson, I think you're going to see him around that 20 catch number.
Well, and Burns, I do believe as well with Mike Sanford's tendencies and how he utilized tight ends at Utah State, does that emerge now that they have a normal offseason here to implement some things? And with the wide receiver group the way it is, you wonder, how they can utilize Brevin Spanford. If you're wondering maybe who the wide receiver three or four is going to be, he can be that, you know, tight end that you can flex and create a lot of opportunities for up the seam and get mismatches against tight end, linebackers and safeties. So Brevin could be involved in that type of capacity if indeed he does stay healthy.
All right, let's jump next over under. I like this question first because historically the Gophers have struggled to generate sacks. And for the defense house, 17.5, are you going over or under that number?
I'll go for
defensive sacks.
Defensive sacks, 17 and a half. I'm going to take it's, I feel like it's going to be right at that number. So I'm going to go under and take 17.
All right.
Because I think Boye is going to be the lion's share of the sacks. I believe Boye could get you to that point where you just need some sacks from other people. But if they're going to be successful, they got to be over that 17 and a half number. And I'm not willing to commit to that until I see it.
All right. Well, I'll take the over. And for the one of the big reasons is I think Minnesota is going to be in a lot more positive game scripts this year.
Right.
Where if they're in positive game scripts as an offense, you know, they're up, you know, 10, 14 points. That means the opposing offense is probably passing quite a bit because it doesn't make any sense to run the ball because then you'll just, in a fight against the clock at that point, you're just trying to, you know, try to end the game quicker. So I think, again, I think Minnesota is going to have a better season. I mean, I have them right now probably 8-4, somewhere around there. And if that's the case, like you're going to have 8 games where you're in a positive game script where in the second half, you're going to be able to pin your ears back. And if that's the case, and you have guys like Val Martin, and you have guys like Thomas Rush, and you have guys like maybe a Sezzy Otemiwu can figure out how to get home on these pass rushes. And I think one of the interesting points that Boye brought up with me was you look at our pressure numbers last year, and you look at the total number of sacks. Well, that's I mean, it didn't correlate. We had plenty of pressures, but we weren't able to get home. And they know that. And Boye brought up, you know, the difference between a pressure and a sack is just really a few little small details. And that's something that defensive line coach Chad Wilt has talked to us a lot about this year. And he thinks that it's something that they're going to be much more improved on. And that's going to be something for me where I just think between the positive game scripts from between getting, I think, Braylon Oliver back, who is their best blitzing linebacker. Mm-hmm. Boye is another year older. You add in Niles Pinckney, Val Martin. I think Thomas Rush, with actually getting a year to figure out how to play rush end, is going to help them as well. I mean, I don't think we're going to be looking at something crazy, but I mean, that number that I set, I mean, you look at it, well, what did I put? 17 and a half, yes. And it's a 13 game season. Like, I mean, you only have to average 1.5 sacks a game to beat it. So I think they're going to, for me, I just think they're going to hit the over for it.
I just want to know, Ryan, who's actually going to be tracking these on GI, right? Throughout the year.
So I'm know sure somebody
is. Okay. All right. So. And then let's jump next to how many starts will Mariano Sori Marin have in 2021? The line right now is 7.5. What do you got, House?
I'm going to take the under on that because of the flavor of linebackers they have. Because they're going to be – starts is a little bit different than, you know, playing in the game. The way they're going to rotate and alternate these guys, it's going to be based on matchups. So let's say you got a team that has a really good tight end, for example. You're probably going to use maybe a little bit more Lindenberg to have those coverage skills. So there could be some games where a different guy starts based upon the personnel. So that's what I'm banking on here is that based upon the different types of skill sets they have between Braylon Oliver and Jack Gibbons and the type of personnel groups that you might be going up against throughout the season, they're going to have to mix those based upon tendencies. So I'm taking the under on Sori Marin.
Got it. Burns, what do you got?
Interesting. I think maybe starts – is a subjective number for all the reasons that I said. I guess maybe the question would be, at the end of the season, do you think Mariano Sori Marin is in the top three for snaps played by a linebacker? I mean, how about I'll pose that to House that way, because
yeah.
I think that's probably a better indication is at the end of the season after 13 games, is Mariano Sori Marin in the top three for linebacker snaps played?
Yes. Yes, I would say that's definitely accurate because it'll be Oliver Gibbons and Sori Marin, and then everybody else will be more on a rotational snap share. So I was just factoring that in because I just feel like there could be some situations where, you know, another player starts based upon a matchup.
Yeah, I agree with that because Rossi has made it evidently clear they're going to be rotating a lot more at linebacker than they were last year. Now, I would agree with House. I think he is. But I also think the point that House and I are trying to make for everyone is Jack Gibbons is going to play quite a bit. Braylon Oliver in the right situation is going to play quite a bit. Cody Lindenberg in the right situation is going to play quite a bit. And then we're talking about, we haven't even mentioned guys like Josh Ani, Jaquandus Burns. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody else. Off
Team Jaquandus Burns. Team Jaquandus Burns, baby.
Yeah, my second cousin, Jaquandus Burns.
DJ Gordon.
Yep, DJ Gordon, maybe Donald Willis. Again, there's going to be a lot of rotating depending on what each guy's skill set strength is compared to what the opposing offense is for that week, the opposing situation is for that week. But I still think that Sori Marin isn't going away because Flex quote, when I asked him, who do you think is among the most improved here in 2021? First name he said, I think to the chagrin of many people, is Mariano Sori Marin, that he has finally figured out, I don't have to do everything. Jack Gibbons can stabilize things, and I can just play. And I think you did see Sori Marin get better, especially there in December. But it is going to be interesting to see how the snap share works out there at linebacker, Luke.
Mm-hmm. All right, this one is near and dear to my heart. I'm looking forward to the responses here. House, do you listen to the podcast, or have you listened to the podcast?
Oh yeah, I've listened. Yeah, okay. I've listened.
To it. I don't know if you know this, but Ryan James, that's a different podcast. Ryan Burns has a love hate relationship. No, mostly hate relationship with the Gopher special teams, especially these last couple years.
Oh yeah.
So how many times? Now keep in mind that there are 24 episodes usually of Gopher Gridiron Radio in a season. Typically, yep. We mostly talk about special teams in depth on the breakdown. So let's call it 12 episodes. How many times does Ryan curse out the special teams this year? Do you have that? I got a number, and I got 8.5. What do you think there, House?
Oh, I'm taking the over on that, man.
Why do you do that? I want you to tell me special teams is going to be better.
He will mention it even if special teams is going better because he will want to talk. He will find a detail on the special teams where the punt gunner did not contain well enough on the return, so therefore it led to a 10-yard additional return.
All right, House. I mean, for real, I put this in there for the over-unders.
You actually can't do this. You can't actually comment on this because you could influence this. So this is just House and me. Sorry, you're out, Ryan.
Stop. Okay. I just want to have him like give me an actual special teams take.
Okay.
Because like, I'm trying to collect my thoughts here. Like they have Matthew Trippett and Will Mobley. Mark Crawford's another year older. I have nothing to say about the return game that gives me any hope. But, I mean, what do you think realistic expectations should be for special teams this year?
I like Matthew Trickett a lot. That was a nice move, being able to get Mac Special Teams Player of the Year in here. Get some stability. It's the whole operation that has to be solid, though. You got to have the long snap, the hold, and the kicker. I think all those things will come together. The field goal side of it should be better. And Mark Crawford, I would like to look at punting in two different ways. One, you got to look at it in an open field punting situation versus coffin corner punting situation. So when you're in an open field punting situation, you got a lot more freedom to let it loose and kick bombs. That's why I don't look at average when you're looking at punting. You want to look at situationally, how is the guy punting? So I believe this year, you hope you're not in a ton of open field punting situations, but when you are, you want to be able to flip the field. And last year being such a unique year with the specialist having the whole missing time at the start and then coming back, and you had, you know, Mark Crawford playing for the first time. I do believe that the specialist will be better. My bigger concern, Burns, is the return game. I don't know what it's going to look like. That has to be the primary concern for me on special teams, is that has to be better.
So I think House is right. Kicking should be better. Now, should being the big, giant, bold word italicized in air quotes above this. because again, you mentioned the two different types of punting situationally, with either a coffin corner if you're trying to flip the field. I mean, are you trying to pin them within the 20 or are you trying to flip the field? When was the last time we had a punter like have multiple 50-yard punts in a game? Or it's just like be able to like I think of I just have like a bad taste in my mouth, shocker to nobody that Ryan has a bad taste in his mouth about special teams, about like Minnesota would, you know, get it at the 25 or more likely at the 14 because they use their kickoff team or kickoff return team. But then they wouldn't be able to flip the field with a punt and the opposing offense would take over at like the 50. And I mean, that's one of the big things you and I have discussed, House, is you mentioned the return game as well. I don't know if you still remember the numbers that we talked about, I think last month, but like Minnesota's starting field position last year was horrible. I mean, it was one of the worst in college football. And why is that? And it's because the return game was absolutely dreadful. And can it be better this year? Sure. Don't put Cam Wiley back there and it will be, but like, they need something in the return game. And I guess between the three of us, I mean, it's leading into kind of the culmination here is you look at the schedule for Minnesota this year, and I project them to be in a lot of close games like Colorado, Purdue. I mean, you pick a game in the Big Ten schedule, I think it's going to be a close game. And then it comes down to special teams. And as we saw last year, the kicking game didn't help Minnesota win two games. And if they would have, they'd have been 5-2 instead of 3-4. So, I mean, it, to me, it's like, how good is Matthew Trickett going to be? And can Rob Wenger not screw it up? And I don't know. I hope he can't, because between Trickett, Mobley, and Brock Walker, I think you have adequate options there. You know, I'll say a positive thing, Luke, your guy, Dragan Kesich, I think they found something there in the kickoff game. I think the punt and kickoff unit should be much better, and even they were pretty good last year, because you don't have to burn red shirts on anybody. Like, James Gordon can play 13 games on special teams. Donald Willis can play 13 games. Lucas Finnessy can play 13 games. Like, you have plenty of adequate bodies there that can help you there. But
I'm low-key, Burns, looking forward to the most, going to the fall camp practices and seeing who is the punt kick returner. Like, that is something I'm honestly thrilled to see it, because that is going to be the key. And I talked to some people across the country about this, and they said all across different levels of special teams was easily the most difficult position to coach last year, just because of how practices changed. You had to give like way more reps to fringe roster guys than you normally would. So you had like no continuity on special teams at all. And I think a lot of special teams coaches ended up being fired at the NFL level. In many instances where they just were unable to establish continuity. So you look at the trends with field position, Burns, they were like 30th in 2018 in field position to 60th in 2019, and they fell to 115 in 2020. So they have to find a way with improved personnel, more continuity time to get back into that 30 to 45 range in field position, and that can make a big difference when it comes to how the offense performs.
By the way, I'd love to share in your optimism that we're going to be able to watch a fall practice, but House, you know, like I do, if the spring was any indication where we got 45 minutes at the stadium and they kept us underneath for 90 minutes while they scrimmaged, which I was, you remember that day, I was thrilled with that.
And I'm an optimistic guy, Burns. I am always going to be like, I'll do what I got to do.
And then showing up to another spring practice where we get to watch 6 minutes before Fleck calls it early. I just think that college football coaches specifically are some of the most paranoid people in the world. And, you know, Fleck thinks they're going to be good. Other people on the staff think they're going to be good. And I don't think they want, because, you know, the media is the big bad guy, House. You and I especially, not the Star Tribune or anybody else, right? So it's I hope we get to watch it, House. I just, you know, the little I saw from the kicking game at that 145 minutes at the stadium there, boy, it didn't leave me optimistic. But
Matthew Trickett, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
A lot of time to change my opinion.
We got such a small sample size, though. We got such a small sample size to look at the kid. I have faith, Burns. We're going to get to see practice. I have faith.
All right.
All right. Let's get into, I think, what most people are probably interested in, these last two bullets in terms of outcomes. Rivalry games. 5.5. You got the over or the under? And I'm going to say a rivalry game will consist of Wisconsin, Iowa.
And that's where you draw the line.
That's it? Okay, Wisconsin and Iowa. I was going to try and see if I could
Minnesota
find one more.
Minnesota is 1-7 in the Fleck tenure.
Okay,
is against
Wisconsin and Iowa. Can they win one of those games? Yes or no?
All you house.
So can you recap again which games like you're considering a...
It is Iowa and Wisconsin, where Minnesota this year is at Iowa City. Haven't won there since 1999. Iowa has, I think, Wisconsin and Northwestern before they play Minnesota. And then Minnesota culminates after two tough road games against Iowa and Indiana. They're at home at TCF Bank Stadium against the Badgers, where...
Huntington Bank Stadium.
Yeah, Huntington Bank Stadium. 2 weeks before, Wisconsin plays Minnesota. They got home games against Northwestern and Nebraska. So the question is, House, do you think Minnesota can finally start at least splitting with their two rivals here in year five?
I do believe they split with their rivals and they beat Iowa this year. That is my take based upon Iowa, it's like you talked about earlier.
I'm with you. I take the over. I do think they finally figured out in Iowa City. But I think that Wisconsin game is interesting too, because I was having discussions with people at Big Ten Media Days about, like, we could talk about the same things with Wisconsin that we could with Iowa. Where, like, is Graham Mertz actually a good quarterback, or is he going to turn back into a pumpkin like he did down the stretch?
I think,
like, they still don't.
How many shirts do you think he sold?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, how many? Like, okay, so let's look at Wisconsin.
Sorry, my bad.
Let's look at Wisconsin. Like, they don't have a generational talent NFL guy bona fide there at the tailback position, from all things I've read from our Wisconsin 24/7 guys. They lose guys on the offensive line. Yes, Ryan, but they reload every year. I was reading some of the positional previews from our Wisconsin site. In another area where, that staff is concerned is on the defensive line. They don't have maybe what they normally would have there. Now they still have a very good back seven, but I mean, I look at their schedule too. They lead off. They lead off with Penn State. They get Notre Dame, Michigan. I mean, it's like, I understand Wisconsin should be the prohibitive favorite, but I just, the point I'm trying to make is I think the West is much more open than what I think people voted in that Cleveland.com poll, where it was Wisconsin, I think, got 29 of the 36 and Iowa got the other seven, which House and I have detailed why it's seven first place votes for Iowa this year would absolutely bewilder me. But I don't know. I think Minnesota, you get them at home. I think Minnesota, we'll see how they're coming out of that, their own little final four game stretch there, which is just brutal. Final five game stretch there, where it's Northwestern, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin. But I don't know. I think they figured out in Iowa City, and I think that final game of the year maybe has 2019 implications again if things continue to break like House and I will think they will. So I'll take the over there, Luke.
And I love Wisconsin's secondary. I think their secondary is going to be the strength of their team. Their second-level defenders are phenomenal. You got Jack Sanborn back again.
Sure.
The one interesting thing that I think about Wisconsin is they have the third-worst offense when it comes to first-down passing efficiency last year. So you look at how Wisconsin performed on early downs and how that really impacted the way that they – their efficiency overall as an offense, it's actually really stunning. And I believe Paul Christ is calling plays this year instead of Joe Rudolph. So obviously he felt like they needed to do a lot better in that category. And we know they're going to lean on the running game, but Graham Mertz, his numbers are totally stark contrast when on schedule versus off schedule. Yeah, so if you can knock him off schedule, he's going to be real solid, but third worst first down passing team in the country. And they had a low, low, low passing frequency on first down as well.
Yeah, I saw that same, probably the same infographic you saw, House, where Mertz really struggles when they're off schedule. I found that very interesting because Wisconsin, I would assume you can correlate their success to being on schedule or off schedule, in games, period.
Which is, that very good offensive line and the generational running backs they have been able to mask the quarterbacks.
Exactly. Well,
I don't think they have a generational talent for an NFL guy there at running back right now, whether that's going to be, Jalen Berger or the Clemson kid they brought in. And again, I look at their offensive line and I'm just like, they lost Van Lennon, they lost Dietzen, who both had started a lot of games for them. And I look at what they're returning and I understand that they've recruited well there for a long time. They certainly have been in recent trends, but I respect the hell out of Jim Leonard's defense. And I think they're going to be one of the best defenses in the country again, even without maybe what they would normally have on the defensive line. I just think their offense, just like with Iowa's, it's like, how are they going to move the ball? And then it comes down to, what House and I talked about defensively is Minnesota's defense last year was a sieve. I don't think I think they're going to be a sieve this year. And if they're not, you're going to be in some very important football games.
All right, so let's close this out with I tried to get to this earlier and we punted this towards the end here. How many regular season games does Minnesota win? The line is 7. Daniel House, you get first crack at this.
I'm taking the over on that easily because I believe this team has excellent chemistry, and I believe that is one of the most important things. We talk about statistics. We talk about all of the variables for success. I am always going to lean on the team that's got the talent and the chemistry. And when the chemistry is one of the best traits, I think you're going to win a lot of football games against teams that might be just an ounce better than you. So love the way that the Gophers have their roster formulated. Like you look at how you watch Tanner Morgan, Mo Ibrahim, Boyama, if you go down to media days, and you could just compare how they handle themselves, the type of message that they put out, the way they talk about the team and represent it. I'm so amazed by that and how they handle the media and just the way they represent the program. And I believe that funnels out to everybody in the program. And I believe the Gophers will be better up front on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to create more pressure, which I think is the key. And that, we talked about that earlier at 17.5 number. If the Gophers are going to take the next step, they got to be over on sacks at 17.5. So if they can do that, I think they'll be successful. The experience that they gained last year with some of those young guys, the defense will be better. Offense brings a lot of experience back. Wide receiver 3 and 4, that's the one spot where I'm like, do they have enough firepower there to, go toe-to-toe with some explosive offenses? I think they'll figure it out. And if you're going to have one position on the team that you're maybe having a question mark on, you want it to be wide receiver just because of Minnesota's ability to develop those guys.
Before I give my answer, which I don't think should surprise anybody, I'm on ESPN's FPI. What do you think they have projected for Minnesota this year?
Probably about 6 wins, 5 or 6 wins.
I think I saw this, and I think it was 6.5.
So they have Minnesota projected to be favored in 5 games this year, which if Minnesota goes 5-7, I don't even know what to say at that point. I don't know how they would go 5-7 unless some things happen. But I think the point they're trying to make and the point I'm going to make here is there's a lot of close games. The Colorado game, Purdue, Nebraska, Maryland, Northwestern, Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin. Minnesota's projected to be in a lot of games where maybe it's coin flip, maybe it's 60-40 one way or another. And it's going to come down to, when Minnesota goes trestle ball, which is the bane of my existence, can they be able to put the game away? Or if they need a key kick to put them up, so say it's a 20-14 lead for Minnesota, can they actually have a field goal kicker make one from 47 in the fourth quarter to make it that all-important two-score lead? And, again, I'd like to see Matthew Trickett be able to do that. But I do think Minnesota's, like I said earlier, an 8-4 football team right now with a win over Iowa in that instance where, I don't think they get it done against Ohio State. I think they trip up on one of these games that maybe they shouldn't, and then we'll see what happens. But I could for sure see a scenario, and I don't think that's all too far off where, you're looking at a 2019-esque season if everything clicks. And, we're talking about everything clicking in terms of Daniel Jackson takes the next step to help Chris Ottman-Bell. Brevin Spanford stays healthy. This offensive line finally brings physicality against Iowa and Wisconsin when it matters most. And then obviously we'd be predicated on the defense taking that next step to become above average to a good defense. And then the kicking game and the return game not absolutely being a dumpster fire. because, again, I look at these games and I'm like, you know, I think a lot of people don't think Minnesota's going to win in Boulder. And I'm thinking to myself, a Big Ten physical running game against a Pac-12 team. I saw that 3 years ago at the Holiday Bowl where Washington State wanted nothing to do with it. You know, Bowling Green and Miami, Ohio don't scare me, obviously. Purdue, Nebraska, Maryland, Northwestern. Again, I think, I mean, maybe I should be, you know, the way I'm talking to myself into this and from what we've discussed today. I mean, I just think that I think this is a team, Luke, and don't you rub your temples while I'm talking there. I can see you doing that. Where you get to the final three games of the year with Iowa on the road, Indiana on the road, and Wisconsin at home. And if you can find a way to go, I mean, I think you at least have to go 1-2 there, hopefully 2-1. Heaven forbid we get optimistic and say Daniel House thinks they're going to go 3-0 in that three-game stretch. And if it's not this year for Minnesota, and that's one of the things we've been talking about on GI, is if it's not this year for Minnesota to, like, get the West, especially with pods coming, and we don't know how much longer the Big Ten West is going to even cease to exist. It's I guess the point is House and I are taking the over. So
I got it. Okay, let's wrap this up. We're gonna do a quick draft. I'm gonna participate in this. We're gonna do a round robin draft. House, you get first pick. You're the guest. Okay, so
Okay. You're
gonna pick once. Ryan's gonna pick last, so he's gonna get two in a row. We're gonna do five rounds. We're gonna pick players that we think are gonna get Big Ten honors in 2021. This could be honorable mention, you know, first team, whatever, but any kind of Big Ten honors.
All right.
Of any kind. So a lot of these guys are not gonna get it, right? But we're gonna throw a lot of names out. So, you know, projecting who we think might be able to get Big Ten honors. And we'll see, you know, maybe we'll tweet out, see who thinks who wins, and then we'll keep track of this at the end of the season, who actually is the victor.
Okay. All right, House. You got the first pick. Easy
with pick. With the first pick in the Go for Gridiron podcast draft, Daniel House selects Boye Mafe.
Oh. Well, that wasn't gonna be my chalk.
I like it. Okay. I'm gonna go with Daniel Faalele.
Okay. I'm gonna rush up to the podium here like when the Vikings forgot to pick. And I'm going to pick Mohamed Ibrahim because we somehow didn't pick him already.
Well, we both listened to this podcast religiously, and we know that you don't think that much of him. So who do you got? Who do you got on your second pick?
Ottman Bell.
Okay. I'm taking notes here as we go. So Chris Ottman Bell. Boye Mafe is off the board. I really kind of wanted him. I thought he could go really high, but I'm going to go with maybe another dark horse. I'm going to go Niles Pinckney.
All right,
House, you got two here.
I'm taking Tanner Morgan. And my other one, I'm going with D'Angelo Carter.
Oh, I had him on my list. I see, I got to prepare and you guys didn't because I made this up on the fly.
Typical Luke.
Yeah.
Preparing it on the fly.
I know. All right, I'm going to go John Michael Schmidt.
Okay.
Thank you. I like that one.
I will say Blaze Andrews.
Okay.
I feel like people want us to, with these final like six picks here, get a little off the board.
Hold on real quick. Since we're through three rounds right now, I just want to point out that only House and I have defensive guys. Could you please pick someone on defense, Ryan, at least?
Coney Durr.
It's a good pick.
Most chalk board. I feel fantastic about my four picks.
I like it. I like your board. I feel like it's safe, though. I feel like it's really safe.
Fine. I'll go. We'll see who's left after your next four selections here.
All right.
Can we recap who's gone here? Can we recap?
Yeah. Okay, so I'll recap who's gone. So first, so right now on your... or I'll go Ryan since he has four picks. He took Mo, Chris Ottman Bell, Blaze Andrews, Coney Durr. I have Daniel Faalele, Niles Pinckley, John Michael Schmidt. You have D'Angelo Carter, Tanner Morgan, Boye Mafe. So I'm next. I'm going to take, I feel like I've taken kind of all dark horses. I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to take Brevin Spanford.
That was Burns' guy. He was going to pick him. I know he was going to pick him.
Oh, you are killing me.
So hold on. Which ones are killing you? You really wanted John Michael Schmidt?
I was hoping Brevin was going to make it, but trust me, I get why you took him.
I listen to the Gopher Gridiron Arrow podcast, and by the way, I do read Gopher Illustrated. I probably got to get on Gopher Gurus too as well. We'll get back to that though.
All right, nice. You got your final two selections. What do you got?
Okay, I am going to go with. Oh man, this is a big decision. I'm going to go Jack Gibbons.
I wanted Jack.
And then I get another pick, right?
Yeah, that's your last.
Yep,
pick.
Yep, last one.
This is an ode to the great Ryan Burns, Matthew Trickett.
Oh boy, God, I hope you're right.
I'm confident. I'm that confident.
Boy, and like my whole board is like completely screwed right now. So I've been riding the hype train all year. I am going to go Daniel Jackson.
Okay, I like that.
Well, see, what I want to take is Connor Olson, because apparently we have forgot about a guy who has started for four consecutive years.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would love to also potentially take Samuel Schluter, who has started for multiple years. Because again, if I'm thinking those two are going to get all conference, like, they got all conference honorable mention last year. Maybe they can get on the second or third team. Well, if that's going to happen, Minnesota's going to have a damn good offense. So I want the disclaimer that I would take either one of them, but because I have taken safe chalk picks here so far, I feel like I have to take a guy on defense. And if there's going to be one that bursts onto the scene, oh boy, I'm not prepared to call it time, but I think it's tea time, Luke. And if Terrell Smith, because this is the biggest question mark to me on the entire team, is what do they do outside of Coney Durr? Because you're going to have Justice Harris in there in the slot, Coney Durr on the outside, and can Terrell Smith in year four? I mean, maybe there are two guys, like with Brevin and Tea Time now in year four. It needs to be time for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping Tea Time, because as House knows, and I know he's getting serious because he just flipped around the hat to backwards. Like, he is excited about this selection. If Tea Time can provide what he needs to after a promising spring, let's say it's Tea Time.
I feel like my board's just gonna get trashed. But I just want to say, like, that D'Angelo Carter pick just totally threw me for a loop, and I wasn't ready for it. I had that one. I thought fifth
the selection.
That's a great value.
Trust
pick.
Me,
House.
I do.
I love it.
I am the big D'Angelo Carter guy. He is someone that I believe could have a big, big year.
I am bullish on him, but I will be more bullish on him in 22 after we see three guys leave, and then he's in year four. But trust me, I'm all for the trill train, I guess what we could call it. So the board ends. I took Mo, Crab, Blaze Andrews, Coney Durr, and Terrell Smith. Luke took Falele, Niles Pinckney, John Michael, Brevin Spanford, Be Still My Beating Heart, and Daniel Jackson. And then Mr. Gopher's Guru himself with Boye Mafe is the number one overall pick, which yep. I love the optimism. Then he's got everybody's favorite insurance quarterback and Tanner Morgan, D'Angelo Carter, Jack Gibbons, and Matthew Trickett. So, boy, I didn't think that's the way it was going to go. And
honestly, guys, those teams are actually really good. I mean, like them. Everybody's got some good balance there.
All right. I do got to get one more question in for House before we let him go. And House, you can kind of promote Gopher Gurus through this as well. But I know that you're into the NFL. You look at these boards. Who's got the best chance to get the most draft picks off our respective teams?
Oh, boy.
I'd have to go with Burns on that.
Oh, geez.
Burns has got the most draft potential on there.
So I'm assuming that's Ottman, like, Bell, and Mo, or in them Blaze.
Ottman Bell. What's his five? Can you go? Who are the last two? It's Ottman Bell, Blaze, Mo, and
Coney Durr and Tea Time.
Oh yeah, Coney Durr definitely. Those four right there for sure.
And then I got the upside play that if it hits for Tea Time, it's gonna hit.
I took the kicker, man. That's how.
But the kicker has been.
It's
a
all
Mac
conference.
Kicker of the
that was
year,
the question.
So.
I know. That's the thing. I'm telling you, he's gonna be good.
All right.
The last question I have for House, then we can get the heck out of here and let Luke leave his dungeon of a basement. There is, what do you think? and this is the last time we'll talk probably on this podcast before fall camp begins, is what do you think realistic expectations are for 2021? Because I believe there's, well, again, my board, I mean, I think it's a great place to be. Obviously, $1, 100 pennies for your first 30 days. I always have got to throw that one in there. But I think there's a disconnect from what fans are expecting, because I think there's people on one end of the spectrum that are like 6-6. I mean, and there's a lot of close games, but I don't think Minnesota's going to win. I mean, if you believe ESPN FPI, 5-7. But then you've also got everybody drinking the maroon and gold Kool-Aid where they're like, anything less than 10-2, that is a massive disappointment, and I will not stand for it. What is even the PJ Fleck era at that point? So, like, again, I think they're at 8-4, maybe 9-3, 10-2 if things absolutely continue to break as well as they did in 2019. But, I mean, say they do go 8-4 with a win over Iowa. What? I mean, I think that would be a pretty good year. But for some people, they would say that's, you know, it's the Jerry Kill years all over again. And I don't agree with that at all. So what do you think are realistic expectations for this team?
I think it's eight. Okay, put it this way. I think if they can win one of the final three games, they will finish with 9 wins. If they are unable to win one of those games, they will finish with 8.
So you have them running the gambit after Ohio State up until those games.
Correct, because I just believe the matchups in those games are, you know, at the point where I just look at, you know, Miami of Ohio, they got a lot of good defensive production coming back, but their offense is not very good. Bowling Green's one of the worst teams in the country. Colorado, I like the matchup a lot, of physical Big Ten team. I think Purdue still has so many question marks on defense to be able to score a lot of points on them. Nebraska is just an absolute mess. Maryland is a team I'm not quite sure on. I like some of the experience that they have on defense. And then, you know, Northwestern, they got nobody coming back, some uncertainty at quarterback. Like, is the South Carolina transfer going to win that job? But they don't have any skill talent at all. So then you get to that Illinois game. First year coaches never do well. They're going to try to switch to a 3-4 defense. That is going to take some time to get the personnel. So, I mean, you look at that middle stretch of the season, I believe that they can handle all of those games, and you get to the final three and you got to win one of them to get to that 9-win mark.
Boy. All right, Luke. I mean, what do you think before I get my thoughts on that? I get the reasoning for everything you said.
Yeah. It's so football is so hard to predict, largely because injuries usually play such a big factor. I think ultimately, if the Gophers can stay healthy, I think 8-10 wins are reasonable. But if they have some key injuries, I think it's going to be somewhere between 7-8 wins for the Gophers.
I think it all depends upon how everybody's projecting them to do on the road. You got Colorado on the road, Northwestern on the road, Indiana on the road, Iowa, and then Purdue. And in House's scenario here, and he thinks the defense is going to be better, special teams is going to help them in these close games, and they're going to win on the road. And then they're obviously going to take care of a majority of the business at home there as well. So, again, I just think that, I mean, Minnesota hasn't won 8 games. Like, if they go 5-3 in the Big Ten, I mean, they've won 5 Big Ten games. You know, four of the last 20 years that's happened. They've won 6 Big Ten games, I think, twice since like 1979. Like, if they go 9-3 or something like that. So I still think expectations need to be put into perspective against what the historic thing is for Minnesota, but certainly I can see how House gets to where he gets to, and I think it's logical. I think it's realistic. You know, I think it's going to come down to, how do they perform against these top 25 teams at the end of the season? Because Iowa's probably going to be ranked. I mean, I don't think they will be, but because I project them to lose to some of the teams that we talked about earlier. We'll see what Indiana looks like in late November, and then you obviously have the Badgers. So I think it's time in year 5 for Fleck to finally get over the hurdle against those, against the rivals, at least go 1-1. I think there's a plausible scenario for it to be 2-0, and if that's the case, I think it's going to be a very interesting time to be on Gopher Illustrated or Gopher's Guru, because I think at that point, if it breaks that way, we're talking about heading back to Luke's favorite city, Indianapolis, for heading back to Lucas Oil there and to see if they can't get a rematch from that first game of the season. So,
Burns, do you think this is the most hype surrounding a single game, this Ohio State one, of the PJ Fleck era? Because the I'm talking excitement level. I firmly believe it is.
I think you forgot about the 2019 Wisconsin game with Indianapolis aspirations and College Game Day here. I think there was a ton of hype for that one. But certainly, I think, you know, this Ohio State game, for it being Ohio State, for it being a year where fans couldn't be in the stands and they all missed it, it's going to be a beautiful weather, I'm assuming. I hope to God it's not like it's been here recently where all it is 95 and humid, because that don't gel well for my upstairs office, which is currently a balmy 84 degrees. But, I mean, there's going to be a ton of hype for it, and I get why. I certainly do. But, I mean, it's up there. So
it is. It is. Just because the fans have been away for so long. And they come back, and you got the national runner-up. You got great weather, September. Yeah. I mean, I'm Thursday hyped about night, that game. You know? Ohio State's got to play a good game right out of the gates with a lot, you know, question marks. Reload with talent.
Yeah, I mean, but Ohio State doesn't recruit, they select, but they're still breaking in a brand-new quarterback, and they still lost a lot on defense. So, again, House, you have me, and I think Luke as well, now thinking – this could totally be the year that it finally happens where, well, here's the thing. And this is what I'll leave folks on, is if it does happen, Luke, and they get to Indy, you know, or they just go not, yeah, I don't know kind of what the bowl situation is there, but I know that if it breaks and Minnesota wins the West, you know where they finally get to go to, which I'm pretty sure, you know, say they lose to Ohio State and Lucas Oil. I think the game they would be projected to go to is something out in Pasadena, California, that a lot of fans have been yearning for a very long time in the Rose Bowl. So I'm not saying they're getting there. I'm telling you it's plausible, but this team has a lot of things to figure out yet, and they have to build some confidence to be able to finish down the stretch there, Luke.
All right, so if they can get to those high expectations, or that high ceiling maybe is a better way to put that, Ryan, people are going to be yearning for content. Obviously, there's Gopher Illustrated, but Daniel, you're on a website that people might also want to check out. So how can they find your stuff?
You can head over to gophersguru.com, check it out. It's $5 a month for the premium content package, and it includes analytics, film breakdowns, features, all that kind of stuff. I'm rolling out a lot of really cool things for the season that fans might like. It might change the way they watch and think about games. So I hope they'll go out and check it out.
Good stuff. Appreciate both of you. Daniel, it's really fun to have you join us. Obviously, we appreciate everybody that listens. We're looking forward to the season coming up. We'll probably be back in August sometime. Hopefully we'll see you all soon. This was really fun, Daniel. We're going to have you again.
Thanks for having me. It was fun, guys.
All right. Thanks for everybody for listening, and go Gophers.